Hey, Mark.
Hey, Elaine.
We don't like the way you say Elaine like that. It's very American. Also, you don't ever say my name. So it's weird to hear my name. I think that's the other thing.
Nor do you.
What do you mean?
You don't say my name either.
I do. I say it when something has gone wrong. And in times of great tragedy.
And when I'm in trouble.
Yeah, that's what Mark. I mean. Mark. Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm okay. Have we started yet?
Yeah, we have.
Okay, right.
I pressed the button ages ago.
Oh, I didn't realise. I thought you were just... thought we were still doing a sound test. Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to talk about Crufts, which is my new favourite thing to watch.
For the weekend.
For the weekend. And you know, I didn't even know it was on until our friend Julia. Hello, Julia. Friend of the podcast.
Hi, Julia.
Always listening to us. Thanks for that. Well, yeah, thanks for that. Always listening to us when she runs. Gets the stats up.
No, I'm more bothered about the... See, I like Crufts. But I could live without it.
How very dare you? It's been the pinnacle of my evening for all 48 hours.
Thus the problem. If it went past and we didn't celebrate Crufts each year, I wouldn't be devastated.
But you do love the dogs.
Okay, there's three things I like about Crufts. You're going to have to name them now. What? The three things that I like.
One. Oh, you don't mean me naming numbers. You want me to name the things that you like about Crufts.
Yes. Can you name the number of the three things that I like about Crufts?
Well, I thought you wanted me to go in one. No, like in Bullseye.
No. The three funny things about Crufts.
Oh, no. See, this is why never put me on the spot. It's not one of my strong points. You like the... you like seeing the dogs come out and being... You like seeing them in the ring.
I don't care.
You like the fly ball, the fly ball game where they run up and down and grab a ball.
It's not the funniest thing about it, though, is it?
Oh, no. I hesitate to think what the funniest thing is.
Funny things. When the commentator refers to the dog as a bitch, just funny.
Not funny.
When a dog has a poo somewhere.
I don't think I've seen that before.
Do you think the winner did it one? The winner did it one time when the camera was on it.
Right.
And when a dog is quite obviously a boy dog, and it's white.
There have been some rather spectacular boy dogs. And it has been quite funny.
Yes.
And it isn't funny, but it is funny, and we're very tired. I think the tireder we are, the funnier it is.
It comes from. I think this whole boy dog thing comes from one of Blake's TV programs that he likes.
This is not going to sound good, but yeah, carry on.
Where there is it's Yakadee, where it teaches kids how to speak. Yeah. And they teach how to say dog, and it's just repeated pictures of dogs. Some of them are very obviously
boy dogs. Boy dog.
Yeah,
yeah.
So we just say boy dog whenever it comes on screen.
Sorry, when we say you say it. Yes. You say boy dog.
Boy
when
dog
it comes on screen. Yeah.
It's quite distracting.
Yeah, and similarly with
actually,
but the funny thing is, because it is so obvious quite a lot of the time with these special breeds, there's not many lady dogs in the arena. And so when you do see a lady dog, it is quite a bit of a like, oh, there we go. There's one. It's very boy dog heavy, I find. It's not very gender neutral or equal.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's a reason for that.
Yeah, maybe.
Last year's winner has been retired and had a litter.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, see, there you go.
Things I see when I look up from my laptop. And yeah.
But it's really good fun. And I do love seeing the people that... Because it so reminds me of, obviously, Best in Show, the sort of the satirical film, and which really leans on the type of characters that take themselves off to the dog shows. And I do feel sort of kindred spirits in the people who were involved in these sort of showings, in that when we do see clips of them and when they sort of take us behind the scenes, I feel there's a lot of neurodiversity going on there. And so I kind of feel like they're my people.
I think they found their thing.
Yeah, it's their special interest. What sort of dog would you like to be if you were a dog?
I'm sorry, am I seven?
Yes. Which group would you want to be in? Because there's lots of different groups. There's like the toy group, the utility group, the working group. What kind of dog do you think you would be?
What was Schnorbitz?
I don't know. I don't know who Schnorbitz
St. Bernard.
Is. A big St. Bernard. I think that's right. Yeah. I think I would want to be a gun dog.
You're not a gun dog. You're not a gun dog.
I'm like an Irish setter.
You're not an Irish setter.
With a beautiful, glossy red coat.
No. You are one of the toy dogs. Yeah.
You're...
Eric.
I knew it. I was going to stop it there and I was going to move on to telly. And I knew you were going to talk about Eric. Eric was a Pekingese. Did he win a couple of years ago? I can't remember.
If he didn't win, he won the hearts and minds
of the general public. And he was this very, very low to the ground, very small dog that you said, and you were spot on with this, looked like a pain au chocolat, but like waddling along, like a little waddly pain au chocolat.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant.
Had his hair too long.
He's gorgeous. Anyway, Pekingese and a...
St. Bernard. That's brilliant. Not a couple that I anticipate seeing anytime soon.
No, but it might be the title for this week's podcast. Watching television. Two shows for TV. Let's start with Mr. and Mrs. Smith on Amazon Prime.
I hope this hasn't passed everyone by.
No, I think people are still talking about it. I mean, I'm probably going to be proved wrong. Everyone listening going, what? That was years ago.
See, I've not heard many people talk about it. That's the other thing.
Oh, I think a lot of the TV podcasts I've listened to have been talking about, and also like going back to it because...
Yes, but yeah, I'm talking about real people. I'm talking about people who I work with and friends.
Oh, okay. Oh, you mean the general public, in inverted commas, not people who love television?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
So this is a reimagining of the 2004, 2005 film.
Oh, good guess, though.
Yeah, yeah. Starring Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie.
That film.
Was that the film that launched Brangelina?
That's why I'm saying that film. Yeah, that's where they met and had an affair.
Was he with... I know this isn't really relevant. Was he with Jennifer Aniston before that?
I think so. I mean, it's been such a long time. Mm. Even when I'm saying had an affair, I'm thinking, oh, was it where they met and things got a bit... Yeah, anyway... It's when it all kicked off, isn't it? It's when they were together on screen.
Starring Donald Glover and Maya Erskine as two hitmen who are... I mean, this is quite different to the film, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because in the film, not that I've seen it, but in the film, there is a married couple who don't know that they are assassins.
Don't know
until,
that each other are assassins.
They don't know each other are assassins until they have to assassinate each other.
Yes.
Therefore... japes occur from that.
Hilarity ensues.
Hilarity and japes. With this, you're right, it's a very, very different setup. You've got two people who don't know each other who are then married or have... it's set up that they have a marriage.
Yes.
And they both know they're assassins and they're sent off on various tasks to complete.
Have you seen all of this?
No, I've seen a couple of episodes.
Okay, I've only seen the first two.
Mm-hmm.
So the pilot of this, I had no interest in watching based on the fact that I thought it was going to be like any old standard remake of a film that I didn't really care for in the first place. And I think you saw it. Do you see it as part of the Custard?
Yeah, so yeah. I was invited to guest on the Custard TV podcast, which is an amazing podcast talking about television week in, week out. So if you haven't come across the Custard TV before, go check them out. And one of the shows that we were covering that week was Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Mm. I would not have checked it out as you suggest. I would not have gone there if I hadn't have had to watch it as homework for that show.
Is it controversial to say that I think that calling it Mr. and Mrs. Smith does this a massive disservice?
Oh, no, I don't think it's controversial at all. It's just not the same thing.
I think the comparison I'm going to make, and it's not a like-for-like comparison, but Westworld, the HBO drama, took what is essentially a popcorn film and made it into a prestige TV show based on the same themes. This almost reverses the whole point of it. And I think putting it on Amazon paints the picture, and this is my prejudice against Amazon Prime or Prime Video, whatever they want to call it this week. This is a far more complex show than I would expect from Prime. And I think if this was HBO doing this, you'd think, okay, so they're doing a prestige version of it. But I did not expect this to be anywhere near as good as it is.
I think like an Apple, like a, and it's not Severance, but like a Severance,
yes.
Or, you know, those sorts of shows that you get on Apple. I think this, you're absolutely right. I don't think it really belongs on Prime. There's too much to it.
Yeah.
It's not really about the assassinations that are going on, or the tasks that they have to complete. It's really about them as two people who don't know each other, come from very different backgrounds, being thrown together in this beautiful apartment in New York and having to work out who they are, because they're work colleagues, but they're also now very personally intertwined. And what I'm hoping when I get through the episodes, what I'm hoping is that you know, carries on, and we get to see what happens with them and the difficulties that brings. There are supposedly lots of really good cameos coming up as well. There were some right in the first episode that I really enjoyed. So
I'd say there wasn't so much in the... there was in the first episode.
Right at the beginning.
Yes, of course.
I think what has happened is... So I've watched a couple, and then I think it's very much a Friday night...
Yeah.
...sort of TV show for me. And it's not one where... And that sounds like it's going to be throwaway, but it's not. It's not one where I can sit on a Tuesday night and go, oh, do you want to sit Mr. and Mrs. Smith on? Because my brain's not in the right mood for it then. I need to be relaxed. I need to have a bit of time. And I need to sit on a Friday going, okay, I've got a good hour here. I'm relaxing into the weekend. I don't have anything on tomorrow. And my brain can switch on to appreciate this show. And that's where I've come a cropper, because I haven't had that opportunity to go back to it and give it what it deserves. And I don't want to just charge through them all while being in the kitchen and coming back through.
Yeah.
That's the reason I haven't gone back to it. Not because I don't like it. I think it's a really strong show. But you're absolutely right. It doesn't belong on Prime. It also, Prime is so clunky, isn't it, as well?
Yeah.
It takes 3 hours to find anything. And even when you've watched it, you're like, I've just watched it. It should just be there waiting for me the next episode. Mm. So that puts me off as well. It almost feels like it's tucked away in the corner of the television somewhere.
Absolutely, yeah.
I really liked it. You haven't said whether you sort of liked it or not. I
think it's brilliant. I feel this was made... There was a pilot made, and then it got greenlit with a budget. And there are people, because there is a cameo of a very famous person in the first scene, like a cold open of the first episode. Wouldn't surprise me if that was shot after it was made, because once you get to the second episode, boy, do the Hollywood stars start turning up. And I'm not going to spoil who it is, but there's a next door neighbor that just pops up who, major film star, and then they go, they go to a party to fill out a mission, and people popping up left, right, and center there. So
it's very glossy, isn't it?
Yeah,
feels really expensive and glossy.
Yeah, I mean, I'll stick with it. I mean, it in some ways it reminds me of a Poker Face.
Yeah. Okay.
It's
episodic.
It's episodic, but there is a scene that runs through it. Lots of kind of like small cameos of people that you know from other things. Yeah, I mean, look, if this passed you by, really, really check it out. A lot of people got Amazon just to get next day delivery. I know we quite often do. We do cancel it from time to time, and then we get something and we find out it's cheaper to subscribe for a couple of months than it is to buy it. So yeah, we just happen to have it at the minute, and I think we'll definitely work through this. Now you want to talk about... I want to say Shogun.
You're absolutely right.
Yes.
It is Shogun.
I have called it Samurai before now.
I know. Do you know anything about Shogun? Do you know the book that it's based on, or the 1980s television series that came out before? Do you have any knowledge of
Shogun? Oh, fuck. Is it a remake of that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember Shogun. Yeah,
oh, really?
Yeah,
do you?
Yeah.
It's so funny, because when I've been listening to the podcast, and there's a lot of... people doing episode by episode reviews, you know, like the spoiler specials.
Yes.
They're doing those, and they keep talking, and it's mainly the Americans, they keep talking about this 1980s, I think it's like 1984, little mini series or something that was on with Richard Chamberlain.
Yes.
And I was like, I have no recollection of this whatsoever. And actually, I'm quite pleased that I don't have that baggage with it, and I've never read the book either.
Yeah, because it stars Toshiro Mifune, who was one of the guys who worked with Akira Kurosawa. I only know that because I was watching Redbeard today on my lunch hour, and was like, yeah, and then realized, I was like, so I'm sure I've seen him in other Kurosawa films and saw he's been in everything else. And yet now I look, he's been in Shogun. So, yeah.
Well, Shogun is set in 1600s feudal Japan. And, I mean, I'm just sighing at myself. But it has been called the Japanese Game of Thrones.
And that's what puts me off.
Yeah, I know. And I've been racking my brain as to how I can describe the show, but I'm just gonna say, like, if you need a pithy what is this like, what is it tonally like, what, you know, what are the plot lines like, it is a Japanese Game of Thrones. We've got different houses, we've got different factions and lords and ladies and different religious intrigue, political intrigue, you know, lots of machinations, people being enemies of other people and people like saying that they're your friend but they're not really your friend, and that's essentially it. And into the mix comes this guy from England who has been on his big boat, on his ship, and he has been traveling and he's been looking for these distant lands of which he knows not.
Yes.
And he lands in Japan and he's our surrogate. He takes us, you know, we're with him as the various factions pass him around or say that he's going to die, but then he's not going to die and then he might be useful. And I'm trying to remember what his name. See, this is the problem. I don't remember his name, his character's name.
And that takes a lot for you.
Yes. I remember is the actor, because the actor's called Cosmo. So that's quite easy for me to remember. But I can tell you the Japanese cast, and right at the heart of this, and the people who I'm really, really interested in, there's so many, but the people I'm really, really interested in are Lord Torunaga, who is played by Hiroyuki Sanada, who we know better as Dogen from Lost. Do you remember Dogen? He's in the temple.
Yes, with Lennon.
Yeah, and with Lennon.
Yeah.
Yes. And he was also in Westworld as well. And he was in The Last Samurai. He is our central character, not the English guy.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that is what makes Shogun, or this iteration of Shogun, I believe to be pretty different from what you're going to get in the 1980s.
Yeah.
Because whilst, and I've looked his name up, is John Blackthorne. Well, Cosmo Jarvis's John Blackthorne is sort of the fish out of water, and we are seeing through his eyes different cultural aspects of the time. You know, some really interesting conversations that he has that shows that things are very different, sort of in his mind compared to other people's. And there are some real comedic moments there. So while he's sort of taking us through, I'm really not bothered about him. I want to know about Lord Torunaga and also the people around him, like Lady Mariko, who's played by Anna Sawai. They are so intriguing. They are playing this perfectly if you are into your historical drama. I mean, it's, you know, a lifting of the eye, a look, just so intricate, their acting. And then Cosmo Jarvis comes along and he kind of pulls me out of it. And I don't know, I'm trying not to be cruel, because I don't know if he's doing this on purpose, but he is so big and so broad. And he sounds like a really over-the-top Tom Hardy. So he's it's all of that all the time.
Yes.
And he looks like Tom Hardy. B, he sounds like him. And sometimes when I'm watching this, going, you know, my brain sort of takes me off into like, oh, it's a young Tom, and it's not. He's not Tom Hardy, but it's that sort of level. And I'm really hoping it's a choice that he's really big in the first few episodes, and he's going to have a journey to become quieter and maybe more respectful of the culture that he finds himself in. That he's going to learn, you know, from the people around him, and he's actually going to become a better person for it.
Yes.
And I'm really hoping that we're starting at this really, really heightened, because he just doesn't fit right with the rest of the cast who were just playing it very subtly with a lot of nuance. I also have to say that this show, much like Game of Thrones, really takes you off into some horrific places. There is torture, there is death, there is death of children. And you kind of go, oh, they're not going to do that.
Mm.
Oh, they do.
Okay.
They really do. And you just have to sort of like go, right, okay. Much like with Game of Thrones where you go, oh, they're not going to do that with a kid. They're not going to do that to that woman. Oh, no, they really are right in front of you. So there's certain scenes, especially around children, there's certain things where I've had to just sort of park that and go, right, it's only TV. There are times where I've just had to park that and go, it's television, it's not real.
Yes.
Move
it's only
on.
A game show.
Yeah. Now, you have already said you are not willing to watch this because of the Game of Thrones comparison.
It's not... I mean, I just don't care about game like things set in those sort of times. Like, it took me...
But you liked Game of Thrones. We watched Game of Thrones in Las Vegas, I remember.
Yeah, notably 8 years after it started it became that much of a cultural phenomenon that I thought I need to catch up for the last few series. Cue the point it got really shit. So that, do you really want me to get on this and make it shit again? No, I just don't care about this stuff. It's not something I'd watch. It's okay.
I find that I think it's a shame. I know we all have our genres that we like and we don't like. And you know, if you said to me, "Oh, there's the romantic comedy that I think you'd love," and I'll go, "No, I'm not going to watch that." But I do think it's a shame because it's a beautiful show.
I literally
and it's
do that.
Really interesting.
Like once a month, and you're like, "No, I'm not interested."
That's what I'm saying. I recognize my own failings, but I do think that if there's anyone out there listening and it's, "Oh, I'm just not sure," just watch the first episode, give it a go, see if it pulls you in.
Start
with the first one. This is coming out weekly, which I'm really enjoying. I'm actively looking forward to seeing it, but it does require you to have time on your hands and your phone not in your hand. And as Dawn Glenn...
Not willing.
Yeah. And as Dawn Glenn, who I'm often on the Custard TV podcast with, said to me on Instagram the other night, when I said it was a show that really helps me relax, she was like, "How can it help you relax? It cannot help me relax," because it is 80%, 70-80% subtitles.
You see,
so you have to sit and you have to watch it.
I understand that. And I think, you know, when I go see a subtitle film, I am often more interested in it than I would be otherwise, because it keeps you switched on.
You've got to be in it.
Mm. I mean, after 5 minutes, you don't even notice that they're on anywhere.
And that's why I find it relaxing. I can totally understand what Dawn's saying, because it does mean your brain has to be switched on. But for me, that means that I'm focusing on one thing and not on everything else. So I can completely immerse myself in it and therefore not be thinking about all the things that stress me out outside of that. I really love this. It's going to be on one of my shows of the year. I know it's absolutely up my street because it's historical drama. I mean, as soon as the slide came up going 1600, I was like, right, I'm in. That is absolutely my period of history.
How do we ever end up together?
I have no idea.
Because that is literally my idea of hell.
I know.
He says, having watched Redbeard this lunchtime, but yes.
Will you explain what Redbeard is?
It's a film. It's a Kurosawa film.
Oh, a Kurosawa film, yeah.
I don't really know.
So when was it set? Because this is not interesting given this conversation that we've just had.
Yeah, but I feel I want to watch that.
Okay. Oh, so you just want to watch it. It's not that you have a complete lack of desire to watch anything set in ye olden times.
No, just things you recommend.
Just things I recommend.
No, like, it's... I mean, there's a difference between something that's got 3 episodes out on Disney Plus and one of the great films by one of the great directors.
I've never heard of it.
I mean, that's not... That doesn't narrow it down, does it?
Oh, well. Should we talk about films that people might have heard of?
Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see? When you're hurting with your baby, last row in the balcony.
Films.
Films.
Having took a little break to watch the was it the Utility Group? No. Working Dogs?
Working Dogs! The Working Group.
Was it the Working Group?
Yes. It was. The working, okay. That's why I've just said the Working Group to you. Yeah. Oh,
Working Dogs.
Yeah. A lovely big Leon burger. Got Best of Breed.
I want to cuddle that dog.
Best of Breed? Best of... Yeah, Best of... Not Best of Breed. They're best already of Best of Breed. They're the best of the Working Dogs. Right, we just need to, like, get on.
Madam Webb.
Thank you.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no.
Is this a surprise?
No, not at all. And I said to you, why are you going to see this? Because the reviews have not been great. I think people have been having a really good time because Dakota Johnson, who is the lead in Madam Web, has had a very amusing time in her life where she has clearly gone into the press, you know, all the blurb that you have to go into where you go into the hotels and people are asking her questions all the time. She's just gone into it and gone, I don't care.
Fuck this.
I'm going to say what I like. Yeah. I think she said at one point that it was not the film was not the script that she was given.
I imagine that to be the case.
Yeah.
So this is part of the Sony world of Spider-Man villain sort of thing.
Right. I mean, there's a special phrase for it, isn't it? Is it like...
Wank films, yeah.
Spunk
or something. Spunk. I've got no idea. I think that's an Empire podcast.
But there's something where it's like an acronym, isn't it? But
anyway, Madam Web was never anything that I've ever heard of.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of Morbius, and that turned out well. So,
well, to be fair, like I know works well. We never heard of it, but like I hadn't heard of the Guardians of the Galaxy, and I love that film.
Precisely.
So you can't be too sniffy with it, but it's not something I was aware of.
This is a period piece set in 2003. Which is quite weird thinking, well, that's just, that's not a period piece. Yeah, it's like a film in the 80s being set in the 60s. Wow. So, it's quite depressing.
So old.
And this story of Cassandra Webb, who is a paramedic, whose mother died in the Amazon having been bit by a spider. I mean, I'm just losing the will to live
already.
And I'm
taking it the mother was pregnant at the time of the biting. Right.
Yes. Yep. Okay. Yep. So... Cassandra finds she might have some mystical powers. I'm going to say now, it's really tough to go into a film that has been criticised this strongly and have an objective opinion on it.
Absolutely.
And I tried to look for the positive. I don't think the direction was bad. S.J. Clarkson did it. She'd done a lot of sort of superhero work. And obviously she did the Defenders, the show that brought together Daredevil and God, what's the name? Jessica Jones, Luke Cage.
Okay,
And
I remember
Iron Fist.
That was happening on the telly. Yeah,
yeah. And I think she's. I think, look, of all the problems with this film, the direction is not it. Is not it? There's actually quite nice shots of on location in New York City, like Magic Hour and stuff like that.
Lovely.
The script is just fucking awful. Mm. I mean. It's logic game after logic game, and I'm not going to go through and point out everything that's wrong with it because it makes it obvious, like, but people just make decisions that people just wouldn't do.
Mm.
So she comes along these three girls that, for reasons that are absolutely fucking ludicrous, are in trouble because someone's after them. And those girls are played by Sydney Sweeney, Isabella Merced, I think her name is, who played, he's best known for being Dora the Explorer in the live-action film.
Great.
And Celeste O'Connor, who I think was in the Ghostbusters film.
I think maybe Finn Wolfhard's sort of love interest in the...
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
In the film, yeah. Which is an awful way of describing someone, but that is the only way I can think of. I think she worked in, like, a diner or something like that.
Yes. They play... three girls that don't know each other but are drawn together by someone going after them. Someone in question, the villain of the piece, is played by Tahar Rahim, who is best known for A Prophet.
Okay.
Which is a great film.
Mm.
What the fuck is doing in
What's
this?
He doing
I don't
this?
Know.
It seems like a bit of a switch.
I mean, it's been I didn't notice it, but having read reviews, it's constantly referenced that he very rarely speaks while his lips are being shown, which indicates that his part's been massively rewritten.
Okay.
Yeah, he has visions of the future where he is seeing his death and therefore has to hunt down these three girls that may or may not in the future. It's absolutely fucking ludicrous. It's badly plotted. Some of the superhero costumes that you see in this, in the flash forwards, make the... I've often said that the girl in the Cineworld Unlimited advert in a superhero costume is a shitty superhero costume ever created by man. That's now gone. That is now gone because there's three in this that are just fucking ludicrous. And then the ending happened and my jaw was on the floor by just how ludicrous everything is. I will say that there is some things that link this film to the Spider-Man world.
Mm-hmm.
There are some characters, and you know what? If you don't want to know anything about Madame Web, just fast forward a couple of minutes. Cassie's co-worker, played by Adam Scott, is called Ben.
Ah!
And he is about to be an uncle.
Oh, no.
And we meet his sister-in-law, played by Emma Roberts. And I'm like, why is Emma Roberts playing this minor part?
Yeah.
And we have a little joke about, oh, what they're going to call the kid. And it's like, oh, and then they get cut off. And so I'm like, what's this? And he's just met someone new. And he has a conversation with Cassandra where it's like, oh, yeah, I met someone new. He's like, oh, what's she called? And he shuts up and won't say her name. I suspect her name might be May.
Could it be Aunt May?
All of this passed me by, and I just like, why was this so clunky?
This is very weird.
This is really clunky.
Adam Scott.
Does this mean that like they were having an affair and she's now pissed off that he's met someone new and that's why they're talking this way? Looking back, it was the most obvious reveal, but somehow this managed to pass me by. So that's how Mark's stupid in films.
Oh dear.
Look, this is one star, 1.5 star. I will say it absolutely flew by because I had such a fun time laughing at it.
Mm.
And I think this goes back to things we've said a lot of times. I'd much rather see a bad film than a boring film.
Absolutely.
I would watch this again 100 times over something like, I'm trying to think of a film that I really did, that really just I was indifferent to. And the only one that's come to mind is The Batman, which.
Okay, right, fair enough.
But I'd watch this 100 times over The Batman.
Wow, okay.
Don't go see this. No. It's shit. Unless you really want to have a few beers and just have a laugh at a film's
one
expense.
On the home end.
Well, I mean, no fucker else is going to see it. So, I mean, there were three people in my screening. That was opening weekend.
Was
so,
wow.
Yeah. Do you know what film I've been waiting to talk to you about?
Oh, is it The Iron Claw?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, me too.
So this is the story of the Von Erich family, who were the big superstars of Texas wrestling in the 70s and 80s. And safe to say that in an industry ripped by tragedy, the Von Erich story stands out above all else as being one of the most tragic stories in wrestling. How much did you know of the story before you went in?
So I remember you telling me the story of the Von Erich brothers and the patriarch. I wouldn't have been able to tell you.
We have a lovely time in our house, don't we?
We do. But there was a series of documentaries that you will remind me of the name of in a minute.
Dark Side of the Ring.
Thank you. That talked about, as the name suggests, things that have gone on in wrestling that aren't necessarily as positive as we would like. So people's personal issues and family problems and the way that the industry of wrestling and the world of wrestling can sometimes exacerbate those issues.
Yeah.
So I think you've always given me that indication that it's not all running into a ring with a bright costume on and then going away and having a brilliant time. And I know from the things that you've told me as well about the sort of the early demise of a number of wrestling figures.
Yes.
So in the back of my head, I knew this wasn't going to be laugh a minute.
Yeah.
And I'd also picked up from a number of reviews who were saying that this was a film that was really being overlooked, particularly in the awards sort of categories and the awards events, and that it was really quite a powerful film and something that would sort of stay with you for quite a while. So I knew it wasn't going to be this. And you know what the only thing is? Our friend Jim, I saw him the other day and he said he was going to go and see it. And I think he said something along the lines of like, oh yeah, like, and he sort of positioned it as like he was going to see like a Marvel film or sort of like a really fun wrestling film. And I had to just stop him and go, it's not that sort of film, Jim.
I really wanted to tell you this was the feel-good film of the summer and just see how devastated you could come back.
Because you could look at it, couldn't you, as like a sports drama, a sports film, and you could look at it in the sort of like a Rocky or now Creed, and people going into like, you know, other shows about like The Wrestler and that, you know, adversity. Yeah, anyway,
adversity.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
You know, but like, coming good when things have gone bad. And I knew that wasn't what it was. However, So to answer your question,
before we go forward, I think it's worth saying, because we're you're going into the review now rather than...
Okay.
This is a story of four brothers who have different levels of interest in wrestling, but are all encouraged to become part of this world through their dad, Fritz von Erich.
Not his real name.
No, because he played a Nazi in the 60s and 50s, 60s and 70s.
Mad, isn't it?
He used to goose step around the ring.
Yeah, I find that fascinating.
And then he became a good guy and became the biggest star of Texas. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, Jack Atkinson, I think, is his name.
So can I answer? Answer your question, going back to what I was saying a minute ago, to answer your question, I couldn't have told you the names of the Von Erich brothers or the dad. Boy, did I learn a lot in this film.
Yeah. I'm going to start with me, because I think I went into this knowing too much. I think this is a fine film. I think this is entirely suited to a miniseries rather than a two-hour film.
What?
I am quite negative on a lot of part of this film. I think the first half of this film, where you see the Von Erichs enjoying each other and like just getting on with each other, is a really, really strong, powerful piece of filmmaking. However, you get to halfway through the film, and I'm looking at my watch and I'm thinking, we've still got every single Von Erich on the board that we started with. And me knowing a lot about the Von Erichs knows that that's a problem. And I think the second half of this film is entirely rushed. There is achievements that are just completely washed over to get to the tragedy. And it makes it look like this tragedy is almost it looks... Major parts of this are sort of tacked together, and of course we have to for time, but there is a really shocking piece of filmmaking where someone has had an accident.
There's a reveal.
Yeah. And that is played like it's 2 seconds after they get the greatest achievement. It's not. It was like there was years after this.
Okay.
And there's actually quite an interesting story about when you get your greatest achievement.
What then happens?
And then it's taken away from you, because that's exactly what happened. Mm. And of course, they couldn't necessarily fit all that in. Look, I'm going to say now, there is a character that's cut out of the film, a sixth brother, depending on how you count in. And I find that incredibly disrespectful. Mm. This is a young lad who is no longer with us. And if you listen to interviews with the director, they say, oh, well, it was just too much tragedy. I'm going to say now, and I might be out of order here, but I think that's absolute bullshit. I don't think that's the reason. I think the reason that Chris Von Erich is not in the film is because his story is virtually identical to Mike Von Erich. And they are virtually exactly the same path, and I think narratively it didn't fit in with the story. And that's the only reason I can understand for someone not to put that in there. I think finally, I think there's a scene at the end of the film which I've seen listed on best scenes of the year.
Okay, yeah, I know what you mean.
I find absolutely the biggest distaste I've ever seen.
Okay.
I could talk a long time about it. I think it's not only incredibly cheesy, I think it pays entirely the wrong message about what happens to some of these characters. And I think it glorifies things that really, really should not be glorified. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does that make sense to
it
you, having seen
totally,
the film?
Totally. I find it fascinating because you have come down on a very different side to me, and I wonder if this is a question of knowledge influencing your feeling on the film. Because this is definitely going to be in like my top five films of the year, and I can't remember whether it came out last year or
it came out last year in America.
I was thinking about it. I'm still thinking we're in January, but we're in March. I thought this was a phenomenal piece of filmmaking. I thought the story was incredibly affecting, and because I don't have that level of knowledge in my brain, and because I went straight to Wikipedia afterwards and read all about it. So some people were married and some people have kids, and that was not in the film, you know, and all of those. And I understand what you're saying about the other brother. I could view it as a piece of filmmaking, as a film, rather than a documentary of the brother's life. Mm. And therefore, I am able, as a person who is not invested in the story,
yeah,
to put that to one side.
And I fully agree. It is the baggage that I brought with me that that makes me, like, I think it's a 3.5-star film. I wish it was more. Like I said, I think even if we went in knowing nothing, that scene would still leave a bad taste in my mouth.
Okay.
I also feel it's quite fun from Kevin to, who do you want to play you? Oh, yeah, I'll have Zac Efron playing you, please.
Zac Efron, yeah.
Yeah, he's involved
wow.
with the...
I mean, but all of them as well, all of the actors involved playing the Von Erichs. And actually, who plays the matriarch? Who's it's
Maura Tierney.
Yeah, Maura Tierney. She is phenomenal in a very quiet role.
Yes.
As a woman who has no agency in her own family, because the father figure is so dominant, and also lots of things to say about religion as well, and the fact that she relies on her faith rather than perhaps protecting her children. I really loved it. I thought it was phenomenal. I think it for me it was a 5-star film, but that is because I viewed it as a film and as a piece of art rather than, as we've said, you know, something that comes from reality.
I mean, he's not been mentioned at all in when I've seen reviews of this, but I really want to shout out Harris Dickinson playing David Von Erich.
Yeah.
Who is the guy who comes in who is pushed over his older brother because I think it's really I really love how they show that Kevin Von Erich is not the natural in front of the camera, and then David Von Erich comes in and absolutely steals the spotlight, which is what happened in real life. Like, you can watch, like on the WB Network, there's shows from 1982 that I've watched that you can see that David is the boy, and then he goes off to Japan, and let's face it, it's not. I don't think it's much a spoiler. He doesn't come back.
I'll tell you. You know what? I was saying it was a 5-star film. And I tell you what nearly took a star off for me.
Oh, no.
Ric Flair, the very, very known wrestler. Even I knew who Ric Flair was, or just had an idea of Ric Flair, was before I even met you, you know, even in the name. And there is an actor that plays Ric Flair, and they're only on for a few scenes, like tiny little bits. And it was the worst acting I've seen in my life. And, you know, you just think, why have they chosen this guy to play Ric Flair, who is so recognisable?
Yeah.
It was like getting someone... It was the complete opposite of Hulk Hogan to come on and play Hulk. Do you know what I mean? Like, just... Yeah. It just didn't work.
It was like a high school kid doing an impression of Ric Flair.
That's exactly right.
And I think the other people who they've got to play are the other wrestlers. So Harley Race appears someone quite early on, and they've got a guy who looks... Probably not the age that Harley Race was at the time, but looks just like Harley Race. MJF plays Lance Von Erich. Obviously, he's been cut out of the film completely. Lance Von Erich was... When there were less Von Erichs to take on the Texas territory than there previously had been, Fritz decided to bring in external wrestlers as cousin Lance Von Erich.
Fair enough.
And MJF was told that he was, you know, it was a big thing that he was going to be in this. And he is in a 2-second montage when Kevin's looking pissed off on the side of the ring.
Right.
However, when the credits roll, executive producer Maxwell Jacob Friedman, thus proving that wrestlers are the best workers in the world. Mm. Yeah.
I'm sorry that it didn't have, not that it didn't have the impact, but that you didn't come out of it thinking, oh, what an amazing wrestling film, because it would be nice to have that, wouldn't it? But I don't think it should take anything away. I think it's just that.
Oh, no. This is the baggage that I bring with me, and I fully admit that. The other thing I'd say is that, you know, I know more about this than most people.
Yeah.
There's still wrestling fans that I know have gone to this who've really enjoyed it. Not all of them have listened to about a 20-hour podcast series about WCCW through the ages, World Class Championship Wrestling through the ages, as told through the eyes of the Von Erichs. So, like, I'm willing to admit it's on me, this. But
do you feel happier that there is a film about wrestling just generally that I think depicts the brutality of wrestling in a really genuine way?
Yeah, and I think it's really clever how they, because I think the big thing around when you're telling a story about wrestling, the big thing that you need to make clear is it's fake, but it's still performance. And if I wanted to be an actor tomorrow, I wouldn't be starring in Marvel films within a month. It's a fake business, but your success is based on how good you are.
You have to be. You're a sports entertainer.
And I think the conversation that Kevin has with Lily James's character really, really tells that well. So yeah, no, I'm always happy when wrestling is. I say I'm always happy when wrestling's in the mainstream. It's normally for bad reasons.
Not always.
Yeah. But I'm always happy when wrestling breaks through in popular culture because it brings eyes onto the business and it does legitimize it because, as we've said before, a lot of people roll their eyes when you say you watch wrestling. So
and I think it really showcased the sort of the local wrestling scenes. And obviously, we've got a really strong local wrestling scene in our vicinity. And I thought it really shone a light on the hard work that goes into that scene to bring people to the door week in, week out, to put on a show where you're being flung onto the, you know, concrete floor, where things can go wrong, where you're having to sort of go, right, you do this and you do that and I'm going to spin you here, but don't leave it too long because I've got to do that. And that week in, week out,
putting
on a show, and also the business side of it as well. You know, you see the Von Erichs sitting upstairs in the, you know, the big hall or the gym, sort of counting the money, working out, do we sell? I really enjoyed that side of it. And also like the television rights and things like that. And obviously it was many years ago, but you could see that coming through now of like, what about the local wrestling, I would call them federations, but you know what I mean? Yeah. The local wrestling, what would you call them?
At the time they were territories.
Right.
Because wrestling was territorialized. Nowadays you would call them companies.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they were the one of the big three that were on national TV. So WWF, Georgia Championship Wrestling, which was then later bought by WWF and then had to be sold to Mid-Atlantic. Mid-Atlantic, which got the rights on the Ted Turner's station. And then World Class was bought by ESPN, and that's what we see. It's shown worldwide, really.
For something entirely different, would you like to come to the desert with me and discuss Dune Part 2?
I'm fresh out of this.
You are. You have just been to see it today.
Yes, I am.
All 2 hours and 45 minutes.
I've not listened to anything about it.
Wow.
Why would I?
But you know, sometimes, I mean, when I come out of the cinema, I'm straight in. I get the podcast on in the car on the way home.
Oh, no. I've got a bit of a backlog of podcasts.
I went to see it yesterday.
Yeah.
So we are absolutely fresh out. My cinema screening was very busy and I went to an IMAX, which cost me £15. I'm really sorry to the lady who was meant to be sitting in seat C16, because I was sat there thinking that it was B16, and only when someone came and stood sort of kind of near me and I realized they were hovering and I thought, why are they hovering? And then went and sat a couple of doors down, did I realize I was in completely the wrong row. But yeah, this was busy. It was you know, people had their popcorn and their snacks and the row behind me was full, you know, all the way up the back. And you can tell because I was right near the front, which I normally can't do.
That's tough in a IMAX.
It really did creak. I had to do it because I was in one of those seats that you can tip backwards. And yes. I literally had to tip it all the way back so that my head was at the right angle to see the screen.
Do you want to do a quick rundown of the plot of the Dune films?
Not really.
Look, I did the Iron Claw. I'm not going to be able to name any other names.
Okay, so
Paul Atreides.
In Dune Part 1, we meet the Atreides family. Leto Atreides, Paul Atreides, father and son. And Paul is sort of like the heir to the dukedom of the Atreides. And his mother is Lady Jessica, who is part of a like group of space nuns effectively called the Bene Gesserit, and I probably said that wrong as well, and
I didn't quite expect you to start here.
They have to move they have to move from their planet.
Right, we're not doing a full rundown of the film.
They have to move to a planet called Arrakis, which original name is Dune, and on Arrakis, what, why are you looking at me like this? On Arrakis, this is where the Harkonnens are, the big bag Harkonnens led by Stellan Skarsgård, and the whole reason that Arrakis or Dune is really, really important to their world is that there's this substance called spice, that kind of floats around in the desert, and that is what powers some sort of space travel, essentially. I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but anyway, everyone's very excited about spice, and everyone wants to mine spice, and if you're in control of the mining of spice, then you're doing really well. But it's all a trap, and the big bad emperor, who we do not see in part one, has set it up between these two warring families, the Harkonnens and the Atreides, to sort of try and bring them both to heel by making them fight. The Harkonnens attack the Atreides in Arrakis, wipe everyone apart from Lady Jessica and Paul out. Paul and Lady Jessica go into the desert, and where they meet the Fremen, who are the original...
Indigenous people?
Yes, the indigenous people of Arrakis, who are initially suspicious of them because obviously they're outsiders, but at the end are sort of showing the Lady Jessica and Paul the way of the Fremen, including some massive worms that live in the sand. There you go. Maybe we should have read out the IMDb summary.
I can see the Robs have got see why the Robs
this
do
is
that
why,
now.
This is why, if you listen to the movie Robcast, which you should do, the Robs read out the IMDb summary, and that is the right way to go, because otherwise things like this happen. Anyway, part two. We're still in the desert. How did you find it?
This film isn't for me, is it?
Oh, is it not? Was part one for you?
No. Like, these lore-rich...
Yes?
Flibbly-wibbly...
The Atreides...
Films
the...
where I feel I need, like, an appendix of glossary of terms next to me at all times. The hackendabing and the wankydeboog and the... Yeah, I'm a rat from the thing, but that's I'm called the davmaging. And I just want to shout out, just fuck off.
Right.
A lot of the through this
I
film.
Mean, that's interesting when you're in one of those massive screenings that you went to today. What did you go into? What's it called?
I went to see it in Screen X.
Screen X. Wow, not
which
Twitter.
Which is where you get the screens down the side as well,
mm-hmm.
that show...
Mad.
So it's
sensory
not the best.
Overload.
I'm not a big fan of them. It worked for the timings for me, and I've got a pass for Cineworld, so it was only £3 extra.
I mean, you would have been like the desert would have been all around you then, down the sides.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the worst experience. Mm. I think the problem is sometimes you are drawn when you first go see it, because I first saw the creator in this, and I think you were drawn to just look at it, and I don't think that's what it's. Therefore, I think it's just there in your peripheral vision.
Okay.
The problem with it is that there's a slight timing issue between the...
Right.
Obviously, it's five projectors.
Yeah.
So there's the standard projector, then there's two on each wall.
Uh-huh.
And if you are looking for it, you will see that the picture changes like a split second different.
That would absolutely drive me mad.
Well, it's not, because you just get used to watching the film, and it's just the peripheral vision. But the cameras do switch, the side things do switch on and switch off during the film,
okay.
Much like the IMAX.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
And I don't know if you noticed that the IMAX goes on and off.
No, I didn't notice that at all.
Okay,
so that's interesting, yeah.
But it's fine. It's a fine way of watching big films like this.
And
I
this
wouldn't...
is a big film.
Yeah.
It's an epic.
I think this is an incredibly well-made film.
Mm.
I think this is... It is beautiful. I just don't care for these characters or this plot. And God, they've elbowed even more characters in this. I mean, Florence Pugh turns up in this,
yes.
Which, like, one of my favourite actresses, and she does fuck all.
Well, I don't think she's integral at this part of the process.
Oh, don't get me started on that.
No, I thought that might be where we were going, but we'll save that for later. Yes, she is there, but has not much to do at this stage.
Christopher Walken just sits there with his, like, he's got a watch up his ass, smuggling it out of, would it be Vietnam? I can't remember where it would have been, but in Pulp Fiction. God, I mean
for 2 hours, 45 minutes then, were you just sort of thinking, this is not for me?
No, I'm thinking, God, that's pretty.
Difficult.
That's this is really pretty. At no point did I care what happened.
Okay.
I think Zendaya is sold quite short by this film.
Don't agree.
Well, good. Okay.
Yeah, well, we'll come back to it in a minute.
And I think Timothy Chalamet does not... I personally don't think he has the presence of the character that he turns into during this film. Like I say, visually, it's great, and but it really lacks any stakes. Yeah, I don't understand the motivations of a lot of the characters. I think it's safe to say.
I think it's brilliant. And I'm completely the opposite in everything that you're saying about Chalamet's characterization of Paul. I think you see a real growth in the character throughout the whole of this film, particularly when you compare it to part one, where he is just the young Duke in waiting that doesn't really want to be the Duke. And he's very young, I think, in part one. Whereas this, you see a real development in him and his thought processes of who he is and who he could be. And I actually don't think of him as Timothée Chalamet when I watch this. I think of him as Paul Atreides, which is really nice. I thought Zendaya's performance sort of pulls it all together. She's real. The crunch point of all of this is that you are going with her. So when he's going off in some strange directions and sort of like religious fanaticism, she's there to pull him and you, to speak for you, to say, this is not who you are, or, you know, so, I'm not quite sure what you're doing.
So I'd agree with it at the beginning and agree with it at the end. There seemed like a big half an hour in the middle where the film, to me, if I'm looking back now and if I rewatch this, which I won't, I think I might be proven to be wrong, but there is half an hour in the middle, or an hour, where she just has nothing to do. And we're waiting for main event Paul Atreides to turn up. And I don't buy that character being that thing at the end and making decisions that I can't understand the motivations for.
Right.
And then can we talk about the end without giving anything away?
Yeah, of course. Because
I was under the impression that this was a two-film series.
Well, I don't think it was ever made clear that would be the case. Did you not feel when you sort of looked halfway through that this clearly had more, especially with, like, for example, the Florence Pugh character, which clearly has more to do, that you could see this going into the future. I knew straight away that this wasn't the end. I knew there'd be another one, and I was welcoming it, to be quite honest with you. But I think that's the difference, isn't it? If it's not for you and you're thinking, right, this is part one and part two, where's my ending? Where's my conclusion? Whereas I was like, I want to keep this going. I'm loving this space opera. Bring on part three. So when we get to a point where it's clear that they are setting it up for another film, I was very welcoming of that. I really thought, oh, great. I look forward to it.
So I know a lot of people that are really, really into the book.
Mm. That's not me, by the way.
No.
Never read it.
Look, I've spoke to a lot of people who think this is the greatest film they've ever seen.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that.
And I quite swiftly can say to them, and at what age did you read the book, and how often was it? Because the answer is early and often.
Yeah.
I've never met anyone who's ever said anything about Dune Messiah.
Okay.
I don't want to see a film of that. Look, it's gonna be made because this film is making all the money.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it's not for me.
Will be signed.
I will still go to see it, and I'll still be bitching about it on this podcast.
I was going
to
ask, would you go and see the third?
Of course it will. Mm. I mean, because I watched the Lord of the Rings films, and a trilogy which I would compare this to, because I think they're very well made. Mm. It's just not for me.
And visually stunning. I mean, from the off as well. I mean, I think it's, I wonder whether now we're just really expect it of Denis Villeneuve, because I think everyone's kind of gone, oh, well, it's really good to look at, as if it's like shrugging your shoulders without taking the time to sort of look at it and go, even just, you know, pausing at parts of this film without the near 3 hours of it all, that would be enough years ago to be like, wow, I've never seen anything like that before. There's a scene at the beginning where some of the baddie characters like fly up in the air, and I was quite taken aback. I was like, God, I don't think I've seen, like, it was like weightless. It was, and I've seen people float in the air in Marvel films and all that, but there was just something about the heft to them and the realism. And I'm sure it isn't real, but there was such a realism to them. And actually, I know you've talked a lot about sort of the different characters coming in and out, but I really did enjoy some of the new characters and the way that they were styled and the way that the visuals changed. So when you go on to the planet where like our bad characters, the Harkonnens, are Harkonnens, I'm never going to say it right, but you know, the big bads, that's all in black and white, and there are these amazing fireworks that just almost look like they're inverted fire, and there's no color.
Yes.
And so those sorts of stylistic choices I find like just phenomenon. And even things like I really like picking out things like Florence Pugh wears some really cool costumes in this. Like, part of my enjoyment of her coming on the screen is every time she's wearing like some sort of chainmail piece or something on her head. And a lot of the time she really reminded me, and I don't know if you remember this film, whether you watched it a lot when you were a kid, but you remember The Neverending Story?
I've never seen Neverending Story.
You've never seen it. There's an empress who is a child in The Neverending Story, and she pops up and she has all this sort of like headgear on, and it really reminded me of that. And you know, I'm like, is he referencing The Neverending Story? Because obviously we're riding on sandworms, and you know, it's an epic with a boy at the heart. And I thought, no, he just can't be. But that's what it reminded me of, and that made me happy. I loved it. I think it's too long.
yeah,
that was the only thing. I was really, really cutting it fine for school pickup time, and so a lot of my sort of the last half an hour, I think, because I didn't look at my watch, but the last sort of half an hour, maybe 45 minutes, I was thinking, I need to get home soon. I need to get home. You know, that it was that sort of, this needs to wrap up.
Yeah.
So I felt the time, whereas I think if I just had more of a free day where I didn't have to do any sort of pickup, I wouldn't have felt quite so much of the pull of it.
I mean, I didn't. I had no school run to do.
You had no duties.
Austin Butler now playing Sting after playing Elvis.
See, this is really interesting, isn't it? So yes, Austin Butler plays Fade something or other. I don't know his name. Something Rathor.
Fade Rautha Harkonnen.
Oh, right, thank you. The Gnar Baron, which is like the next. Mark is rolling his eye. Sorry, I'm doing it just to wind you up, actually. And funnily enough, our friend Chris, hello Chris.
Who or what the fuck is a Gnar Baron?
Yes, well, like the next Baron. He's like, you know, the next in line, isn't he? The Gnar Baron.
I'm sorry, how am I meant to know that?
It just is. Anyway, Chris, who got in touch with me today, said that he'd watched Dune Part 1 on a flight recently, and he had said, oh, I'm really interested with the next part to see like who Sting was playing in Part 2. And I would not have put that to, I would not have put Austin Butler's character and the Sting together. Like,
I've not seen the David Lynch.
Yeah, because Sting played this character in the David Lynch film. Yeah.
Thanks for telling me that. Sorry, I made that joke already on the podcast.
That was
how
mind.
I introduced it.
Yeah, but I can't imagine those two being the same character. But, you know, that's the world that Denis Villeneuve has created.
I think part of the problem is that this is obviously a very lore-rich book. Obviously, it's working for you, and I am quite surprised at that, to be perfectly honest. I feel similar to this, the way that I went to see the Harry Potter films. Like, I went to see the Harry Potter film with the Half-Blood Prince with someone who was really, really into all the books. And at the end of it, she was like, oh, that's such a brilliant film, the Half-Blood Prince. And I was like, can I just ask a question? She's like, yeah. Like, what the fuck is a Half-Blood Prince? She was like, well, it tells you in the film. It didn't really give me a lot of clues.
There is one little bit at the end that mentions it, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, oh, look, Snape's the Half-Blood Prince.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't know what this is meant to mean.
Yeah. Fair enough.
And I feel there's a lot of that in this, in that if I was reading a book, I'd be able to sort of go back and understand what the fuck a Gnar Prince is. And
Baron.
Gnar Baron.
Well, I got it and I didn't read the book, but maybe it's because I was going along with it.
You're you, and you have like quite a photographic memory for like bullshit like this.
Thanks, Mark.
And this is why when we're watching a TV show and you mention a character's name and I'm like, I don't, you're going to tell me who it is.
That's true, actually, yeah. That does happen quite a lot, especially if it's like a big ensemble cast.
You have quite a forensic like mind for names and things like that. So I think you pick this up. Whereas I just hear like I just think
Gurney Halleck, Duncan Idaho, you know, Lady Jessica.
Duncan Idaho, I remember, because it's a ludicrous name that sticks out. Like, what's the character called Paul?
Paul.
You can tell this is written in the time of the Beatles, can't you?
Oh, absolutely. One of the reasons I think I really like it, when I'm sort of analysing it in my little brain here, when you're saying, like, you know, why do you get it? And I really like the way that Herbert, because obviously Herbert wrote the books originally, he's talking about... Why are you laughing, Herbert?
Because I think it's the metronome that's writing it.
There's a place called Metro Center near us, and they have these characters called the Metronomes. And the Metronomes are Herbert, Sherbet, Maggot and Rusty. And Mark finds that hilarious. So anyway, when I'm talking about the guy who wrote the original Dune books, Herbert, Mark's now thought of the Metronomes. Yes, so when he's writing it, he's writing it, like you say, writing at the time, the Beatles, and thinking about ecology and thinking about the way that we live in the world. One of the things I really, really like about the film, and I'm sure the books draw on it, is the way that we look at religion and the way that religion is seeded within cultures, and how, you know, the North doesn't really think about the religious part, but the South is quite a fundamental, you know, like in these cultures, and is someone the chosen one because that's the truth, or are they the chosen one because people choose to believe in it, and are the signs really signs, or is it just coincidences? And I really love all of that religious analysis. That's the thing that when I was sitting there, I was thinking, oh, is Gurney Halleck, like, because I'm with a background living in England, I've got a background of like Church of England and Christianity, so I'm thinking about the stories of Jesus and his disciples, and I'm thinking, oh, is he sort of coded as a particular disciple or someone who's going to betray him? And that, like you say, I will sit and analyse this and work it out. And that's what I did throughout most of the film, is I'm putting my knowledge of Christianity into these films.
I got a bit of Christianity from it.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, there is a bit where... I and you will probably be able to tell me, no, that's not what happened, it's something completely different. But there's a bit like where Paul is saying, oh no, I'm not the chosen one.
I'm not the Messiah.
And yes, and like Javier Bardem turns around and goes, that means he is the Messiah. And I'm like, fucking hell, it's Life of Brian.
It's Life of Brian. Loads of people have said that, you know.
Oh,
loads
of it. Fuck. Yeah.
Sorry. I knew as soon as you started that conversation that you were going to go down. But it is. He is only a humble man would be the Messiah.
Yes.
It's so the Life of Brian. And lots of people have made that connection. Can I just say before we finish that Javier Bardem's character is my favourite in the whole of this film. I think he's called Stilgar, if you need to know who he is. And he plays that leader role that has that religious faith, that seeing the signs that Paul is the Messiah, and everything that he does, he's judging it and seeing it with someone who has such a deep faith, but also really funny, like really well drawn, the way the, you know, that line between earnestness that we would sort of like roll our eyes at, but actual an earnestness that you can sort of laugh along with. And I just think he's really, really wonderful in this, and is really quite at the heart of the film. Anyway, that's all I have to say on Dune that you did not care for.
No, look, I think it's fine. I think it's, again, I think it's about 3.5 stars, and that's all for the visuals. But I am...
Oh, we're not that far off then, because I'm about like 4.5, because I think the length sort of did me in a bit.
But I'm not convinced by Denis Villeneuve as a...
What? What?
Like... As a storyteller, so
he's one of my favorite directors now.
Right, look, shall we have a look? Mm. Can we have a look? Because
yes.
I feel like this is something that is in my mind, and then I think about it, and I'm like, well, I didn't like that. I didn't like that. I didn't like that.
I mean, you must have liked Arrival. Everyone likes Arrival.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Right.
I don't think you like Blade Runner 2049.
Shit.
Which I've seen quite a lot. Actually, I've rewatched it quite a few times, and I really like that film. It gets better every time.
Prisoners I like.
Yes. Yeah.
Sicario is a film that I
respect
rather than enjoyed.
I don't think I could watch that again.
Do you remember that weekend
content?
We went to see that and then Macbeth back to back?
Yes, I do remember that weekend.
God, that was a hard weekend, wasn't it?
Wow, what a lot of time we had on our hands. What a weekend.
Arrival, love it.
Lovely.
His masterpiece. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Blade Runner 2049.
Lovely.
Shut up. Not you. I'm like that clear, not you. Just the film in general. Hated that film. Blade Runner isn't for me.
Because you don't like Blade Runner, the original, do you?
Probably for the same reason.
Yeah.
Dune Part 1 and then Dune Part 2. Yeah.
Like all brilliant.
He's 2 for 5 for me.
I like him very much. Right then, the end.
Well, thank you for listening.
Thank you very much for listening.
If you'd like to follow us, we are on Twitter, aka X, and Instagram, at The Honeymoon Pod. And if you'd like to leave us a review, you can do so on Apple Podcasts or really a lot of different places.
You can do star ratings. That would be brilliant. Thanks very much for doing that.
We're so slick at that, aren't we?
Yeah.
I feel like we've got the Twitter and Instagram bit
going. We've done that quite well now.
And then we're in the point where we're like just going to freestyle when we get to that.
But reviews and ratings really, really do help, especially as we're coming, it's our fourth year of doing the podcast. So it would be nice to add a few more.
Yeah, and we don't quit on our 200th episode, do we?
Mark Gregerson, we will not put that in.
I want to start a war with the Robs before they go.
Very sad news that the Robs from the movie Robcast are finishing their podcast on their 200th episode, and I am devastated, quite frankly. Not being funny, like genuinely, I am devastated that has happened. And when I heard it, this is an interesting insight into our marriage. We were in bed, the light had been turned off, and I was like, oh, the Robs have got a new episode out, and off I tootled, put my little earphone in and listening to it. And then, out of nowhere, Mark heard, no!
I think it was funny that we both independently messaged them going,
yes.
No!
No, and then we both messaged them saying the same thing.
No, we fully understand the decision. Yeah. It takes a lot, but we do
understand podcasting takes a lot, it's very sad.
But let's start a podcast war before it
Well, ends. Yeah, you already have, haven't you? That's with your little quip there. Thanks very much.
We love you, Robs.
They'll not talk to us again. Bye, everyone.
Bye.